Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Everybody, welcome to another Inside College Soccer Podcast. You know, every once in a while, I've brought you guys to some people from other sports to give different perspective on youth sports. We had Coach Hines on, and today I've got a guy that I admire a lot. I found him on X, on Twitter, and I've been following him, and I probably retweet as much of his stuff as anybody's. He does a real good job just putting things in perspective about what youth sports is all about. And so, John Beck, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it, Don.
No problem. Man, I've been following you for, I don't know, a couple of years now, I think.
That's awesome. I've been following you too, so it's always good to share. And you mentioned, you know, being soccer, but it's all evasion sports. It's all sports, especially at the youth level. We're missing the big picture if we're trying to labelize, you know, soccer or basketball. It's all team sports, so. Excited to be on.
Yeah, no, I agree. So where are you from, John? Obviously, I pick up on your accent. I've never talked to you in person, but I'm picking up on your Southern accent.
Yeah, so it's crazy because I was really above that Northern line, that Southern line. I grew up in a small town in Southeast Missouri, and I went to school in Arkansas. And I live in Arkansas currently, but I went to Arkansas State University. And I think when I came back home for Christmas, my mom was like, "Wow, your accent has changed so much just in a few months." So I don't hear it when I talk, but everybody I talk to, it's very strong. So yeah, I think that was developed college. And I don't think it's went away since. So
yeah, it's funny. My kid went back to England for 2 years and played in after high school, and he was living with a kid from Newcastle, another kid from Wales, and another kid from London, and another kid from Manchester. And he had the most screwed up accent I had ever heard in my life. People go, "What is he, Australian? Where are you from?" And no, it is funny how you do pick up the people that you're around, don't you?
It is. And I had a coach, a mentor and a coach at that time too, was from Tennessee. And so I think being around him a lot and being around, you know, just Arkansas people in general, I think I picked it up. And like I said, it's never went away.
So you're a basketball guy. Was basketball always your sport growing up, or did you play other sports?
Play everything. That's why I'm such a big advocate of it. Obviously, the research tells us that, you know, it's great anyway. But I grew up in a small sports town, Missouri, you know, population 5,000 people, so very small. And you grew up playing everything. My dad coached Little League football and baseball, and I played football, baseball growing up, soccer. I swam competitively. I ran track. I played baseball, basketball. So I played it all. I think my last year of not playing anything but basketball was my junior year of high school. And even then, it was a tough decision. You know, I still wanted to kind of compete in track and compete in football. We had a great football team. But that was the last year as far as not playing anything else. Slowly, I started to really love basketball. That was my passion. And then, of course, now you look at the late bloomers and the research, and it's almost like it was a great path for me. Not intended that way, but I just found my passion in basketball, probably in the seventh grade, but I still love playing everything else. Up until my junior years, when I finally just focused on basketball alone, and I ended up, becoming a college scholarship player.
So for those, I've got a lot of parents out there. I'll tell you, when you and I post, or other people post about your kids should play multiple sports, kids should be involved in a lot of different sports, and how it helps one sport. You always get the school of thought out there that you need to specialize as early as possible. That and they'll always point out somebody, right? They'll point out some professional soccer player from Africa that's all he ever played with soccer, you know, and so that's the way to be a pro, is to follow that path. And you talk about the research that there is out there on it. Tell us what you know about what the research says about kids not specializing too early.
Yeah, a lot. I studied a lot. So the biggest thing is, number one, it's just a huge myth, right? Like early specialization, if you look at the top Olympic athletes, if you look at the top, the best of the best, the elite, which is no such thing in the youth sports. You know, you always hear, "Oh, this is an elite third grader." It's like, that's no such thing. Elite is the elite of the best of the best at the top level. It's not a word to be used in youth sports. But if you reverse engineer and look at the stats, it's like the best of the best were number one, multi-sport athletes. And number two, they were late bloomers. There were people that didn't even get involved in their sport until they were late. And then they, of course, you know, have a passion for it. But it's like you said, with the parents, it's like the earlier, the better. The earlier that you specialize, the better. The more that you're playing, you know, it's a year-round sport. And it's just it's the opposite of what all the research says. You know, and it's like you mentioned the best players. I mean, in my sport, in basketball, I mean, Michael Jordan was a multi-sport athlete. You know, he's got Kobe has a great clip where he says, yeah, I asked Jordan what he was doing, you know, when he was 13 and how he started doing this. He said, man, I don't even remember. I was playing baseball. Like, I was playing baseball. Kobe was a kid that didn't grow up in the U.S., you know, AAU year-round system. Steph Curry was a guy that was taken out of the AAU system by his dad, who was a professional player and held out of AAU for a number of years. LeBron James obviously was an all-state football player until he was 16 or 17. So none of these guys in my sport that are the best of the best, you know, Mount Rushmore of basketball players were early specialization people. They're the best of the best, but they all were multi-sport athletes. You know, even Steph played baseball. His dad made him play football. I mean, there's different, all these different sports. And so it's just the opposite of what the research says. It's so hard to convince parents of that. I do the same thing, but they just miss the big picture when it comes to youth sports, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, and I think to some extent there's a misunderstanding about what we're talking about. There's one thing to play in an organized league, and it's another thing to be involved in all kinds of sports. And I'm not saying, because here's what I don't want either. I don't think that parents should be putting their kids into, first we do a swimming league, then we do a basketball league, then we do a baseball league, then we do a football league, then we're going to do a soccer league, then we're going to do, and they're over-scheduling their children so badly in these organized leagues that the kids don't have a life, right? So I don't think that maybe that's what some parents think we're talking about. And at least that's not what I'm talking about. I just look at when we grew up and I look at my kids, how they grew up, and I look at the better athletes that are growing up, and they're always, man, they're shooting hoops on the court, right? If there's open gym time, they're bored. They go down and they shoot hoops. They're playing a screen ball. If there's only three guys, they're picking up a stick, they're playing screen ball, they're playing soccer, they're throwing a frisbee around, they might find some old golf clubs of dad's and they're out swinging them go down to the driving range and hit some balls or just practice chipping or putting. And they're always doing a sport. There's always some sort of activity. And I think from what I understand about the research, I don't think I've studied it like you have, but there's a direct correlation between that hand-eye coordination and also how the brain develops when it comes to different physical activities.
Absolutely. Yeah, degrees of freedom. You know, what you said is unstructured play is so important. And I'm the same way. I grew up, and it wasn't just the organized sports that I played. It was the constantly being outside. And I know it's a much, you know, the world, we find some things out about how unsafe the world was for kids to be out alone and all that stuff. And that's what we grew up in. But parents are the problem, right? It's the adult. I shouldn't say parents. The adults take out the fun. They make it so structured. Kids aren't able to find their own solutions. And obviously, the early specialization sets up, you know, lots of injuries later on. There's just so many studies that it just doesn't make sense, you know, with all the research, why you would have so much structure at such a young age. And I think they think that if I get them involved earlier, that they'll be better. And if I get them just focusing on one thing, you know, and parents usually pick that one thing, well, I think he's going to be a better golfer, so we're going to go all in on golf. And, you know, even Mitch talking about golf, even like Tiger Woods, who I think is the poster child of early specialization. I mean, I saw a quote where he was like, my dad never told me what we were going to play golf. He just asked me if I ever wanted to go. So we're not taking away a kid's passion if he wants to specialize at an early age, but it's the kid's passion. It's the kid that wants to do that. It's not a parent that's trying to live, you know, vicariously through a kid or push him towards a certain sport of what they think is best for them. So I'm all about just kids. If that's what their passion is and they want to do it, we want to encourage that. We never want to, you know, get off of that, but we also want to give them as many experiences as possible. If they can't get it, unstructured play, you know, you want to try things as parents. You want to let kids try things. But again, what you just said is so important because I feel the exact same way. I feel like adults are the problem. They take the fun out of it and make it so structured. And I grew up playing way more made up sports, you know, with my friends outside than I did some structured sport. Like you just said, all these different games. I mean, we would play anything you could possibly play. You know, we hit golf balls around the park. I mean, just anything you could be outside and playing with your friends. But it does. It opens up this unstructured play. Just there's no penalty for doing things and exploring your body and movement. And that's what human movement is, right? It's just being able to see and react. And so the more kids can do that, obviously the better it's going to be. But the structure is what takes that away, you know, and it closes up the degrees of freedom, you know, within the body. And that's where we get a lot of injuries and burnout and all the things that happen to these kids who do specialize too early and you know, make it a year-round thing.
Boy, we talk about adults and how much we can screw things up for our kids. I'm not even sure where to take this, but like, if you've got a parent of a pretty talented, you know, when I say talented, you know, look, there's athletically gifted kids, right? Where you can just tell this kid just catches on to everything. And so those are the kids, honestly, I probably worry more about than like my son, all my kids. My kids weren't necessarily, they got my genes, unfortunately. So they weren't necessarily athletically gifted per se. And they just enjoyed whatever they enjoyed for as long as they enjoyed it. I was never worried about burning out my kid because he just, I worry about these kids that are athletically gifted. You can just tell they're just maybe a half a step ahead. Maybe they're in the top 20%, right, of the kids out there. So you got parents that come to you that are maybe more likely to want their kids to be involved in travel ball, right? When do you start recommending to parents that they more invest in travel ball? In basketball, I guess it's AAU, right? And I don't know if it's become like soccer where we've got various competing leagues. You know, soccer, we've got ECNL, and on the girls' side, the Girls Academy, and the boys' side, MLS Next, and now MLS Next 2, and ECNL RL, and, you know, we've got the Girls' Academy 2 now, you know, the developmental leagues, and then the pre-developmental leagues, and then the pre-developmental leagues, and, you know, leading up into the big travel ball, so that, yeah, well, look, it's so funny. Parents have no problem investing $80,000, $90,000, $120,000, $140,000 over 5-6 years so their kid can get a $20,000 a year scholarship, and they go in the whole 40 grand straight off the bat. They have no compunctions with it. And let alone, what are the odds your kids even get a scholarship with the way scholarships go nowadays? But so let's say you've got a young preteen kid, parent, and they're asking your advice. So what advice are you giving parents with regards to this whole idea?
So again, not to broaden Europe, but like in basketball, and I'm sure in soccer, obviously, you know, in Europe, in certain parts of Europe, I'm not putting it all in one big thing, but it's the opposite philosophy, right? It's more freedom of play. It's not the pressure of winning at a young age. And it's more of just the practice to play ratio is so much greater. And it's about development.
Is it that way in basketball too?
It is huge.
That's interesting, because it's very much that way in soccer. They'll tell you in soccer, they want 4 to 5 sessions per game.
Yep, that's about the same. 4 to 5 per game is the ratio. And in the U.S., it's obviously, what, you know, very different. I mean, some AAU programs are like, we don't even practice. You know, we got kids coming from all over these states, and and they'll play, you know, 2 games on Friday, 2 games Saturday, 2 games Sunday, or sometimes 3 games in a day, sometimes 4 games in a day. I've had, you know, some of my kids come back, I play 4 games Saturday. I'm just like, what? I mean, these guys are in 7th grade. And so the practice to play ratio, I don't like to put everybody in the same boat, but I just say, you know, make sure that you're about fun and development, you know, and if you keep those things at the forefront of everything you're doing. I'm not saying that all travel ball is bad, but I do feel like there are kids that aren't ready, right? It's like, you're going to take the test, you're playing all these games, but you can't even pass the first round of quizzes. And so it's more of that. And I know learning is nonlinear, and development is nonlinear, but at the same time, it's like, let's keep fun and development at a young age at the forefront of everything that we do, not thinking about, oh, well, you know, they compare to other kids. Well, so-and-so's in 7th grade and they got an offer from a university and this. And I try to tell parents that offer doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. In a few years, that offer will mean nothing. That coach will be fired. That kid won't. I mean, most of the time, the kids, especially around Northwest Arkansas, that are classified are these gold teams. You can take their picture of when they're in 6th grade or 7th grade. You can look at it when they're juniors. And I would say 75% of those kids aren't even playing their sport anymore, much less elite. But if you rewind it back to the 6th and 7th grade, they were the best, right? They were the gold team. That's what it is around here. Is they got gold and silver and bronze, and these parents take so much pride. And oh my gosh, my, and I'm like, your daughter's in the fifth grade. Like none of it matters. We have puberty yet. It doesn't matter. So I just try to. There's no certain age as far as travel ball goes, but again, it's just trying to let parents understand the research of are you pushing them or is this what they want? You know, because if you reverse engineer things, the best of the best are going to be playing multiple things. They're going to have large rest periods from their sport. They're going to be doing multiple sports and they're going to be late bloomers. Most importantly, like they're going to be late bloomers. It's going to be after what, well after puberty before they decide. So if you really want what's best for them, you would do more things to take breaks. And again, you're not, if a kid wants to do that and they become, you know, really passionate, obsessed, you still want to encourage, you know, a balance with all the other things, right? Like socially, spiritually, you know, with your friends, all those things, mentally. So you're always just trying to have that balance. But I think just, again, parents reading the research of what it really takes, you know, to be a scholarship player or to be, and most of those kids that start that, it's not with a scholarship in mind. It's just what they really, really enjoy and they have a passion for. And so I don't give a certain age. Obviously, if I, you know, if it was a perfect world, I think it would be a lot like Europe. You're not playing, you know, elite level competition until you're 16 years old or whatever it is. But, you know, junior high, not as serious. Freshman, not as serious. You start getting into high school level, you know, it becomes more serious. And so I think development is, if you just keep fun and development at the forefront, you know, I think everything will take care of itself.
Yeah, you know, boy, so many thoughts go through my mind as I'm listening to you. One of them is look, this is not going to, for you parents listening, and I think it's mostly parents that listen to this, this is not going to be a rag on parents episode. But you said, you know, is it the parents pushing the kid or is it the kid that wants it? I don't think I've ever talked to a parent who said, I'm the one pushing my kid. They all say their kid wants it. All of them say, oh no, my kid wants this. My kid. So how do you even, as a parent, how do you, you know, I wish there were a litmus test, right? What's the litmus test for a parent to go, oh yeah, this isn't really what my kid wants. This is more what I want. I didn't even realize I was doing that.
Yeah, sometimes I'm brutally honest with parents. Like parents will leave. They're all encouraged to watch the workouts, but I will ask a kid like, hey, do you really want to, like, do you like to do this? Is this fun to you? Or is this something like, no, coach, my mom makes me come to this. I really don't really like it. I mean, and I'll tell that parent, like, hey, I want to talk to you sometime, you know, just give you a call and just, you know, try to encourage them to really understand. You don't, that you're right, though. They all think, oh, no, they want it so bad. They're such a hard worker and they want. But and I'm sure it's a lot of pressure, right? Like, how many times do kids tell me that, coach, I feel pressure because I'm on this gold team. I make this gold team. And mom and dad pay for me to come to a trainer, right? And then it's like I go play in games and I'm so pressured. I have so much pressure internally to perform really well because when I get in the car, which is the worst thing for a kid, right? The ride home and the parents. Right. So I'm paying for training and we're doing year round and that's what's going on. And they don't realize the damage that they're doing. You know, the parents have, there's no self-awareness there. And so again, it goes back to like self-reflection, self-awareness. But sometimes I ask kids, like, is this what you want to do? Just be honest with me. I'm not going to tell your mom. I'm not going to tell your dad. You know, I'll lie to him sometime. Like, hey, I'm not going to tell, but just tell me. You know? And I usually do keep that to myself. And I always ask, you know, kids, like, how does your body feel? You know, and I don't even say, how's your body feel anymore? I just say, how do you feel? Like, you know, mentally, how do you feel? Because some kids, their body feels great, but mentally they're like, man, I'm going through this. My mom and dad are fighting. I'm, you know, going through this with my sibling, whatever it is. And so I just think, you know, having that balance is so important.
Yeah, it is, Sean. And I tell you what, I've had kids same way, man. I've had kids that I've talked to that I had a girl I talked to not that long ago in high school. She was getting ready to think about going to college and dad arranges a phone call with her and I, and we get 20 minutes on the phone call and she said, dad, can I talk to Don alone? She grabs the phone, goes outside and says, how do I tell my dad? I don't want to play past high school. Dad was completely unaware. But look, are these kids and parents out there listening? We know your kids love you. They love you desperately. It's not a question if they love you or not. They love you so much that they'll lie to you. that they'll tell you that this is what they want. That's how much they love you. And they'll do anything you want. And I've got this theory, John, when we see the transfer portal in college and we see these kids that go in by the thousands into the transfer portal and nearly half don't make it out of the transfer portal. And these are kids, you know, for example, I had a player not that long ago that went to Gonzaga and she didn't play a single minute, not a minute her freshman year. I want to transfer so I can play more, but I know I'm of that level, right? I know I'm of that level. I won't go down levels. I know I can play at that level. Well, if you could play at that level, you'd be playing at that level. Like coaches never sit players on the bench that can impact their team and help them win more games. So the player's sticking hard to that. And then it's, oh, well, nobody picked me up. Oh, well, I guess I just won't play anymore. If you really love the game, you will play at any level. You'll play in junior college if you love the game enough. You'll play in club soccer. Even, you know, if you're at Gonzaga and you can't get playing time on the varsity team, on the regular team, you'll play club soccer at Gonzaga. You'll never give up the game if you love it enough. So anybody that wants to give up the game because they can't achieve this level or that level, my theory is that that's the secret way of telling their parents, I didn't want to play anymore past high school. You just wouldn't listen to me. And I get parents all the time. This is another one I get, John. My kid tells me they don't want to play, but I don't want my kid to look back on life and regret it. Yep. So how do I talk my kid into keep on playing? It's like, you don't. Your kid just told you what they wanted, and you're going to argue with them about what they want? How many other things in life do you do that with? Do you argue with people? Oh, you really don't, you know, you really should take up dancing. I don't like dancing. Yeah, but you might regret it later in life. Well, look, I hate dancing. No, but you might regret it later in life. And you're going to argue with somebody? So I have this theory about the transfer portal, John. I don't know how to apply. I haven't looked at the basketball numbers. I've only looked at the soccer numbers. I don't know how many kids are going into the transfer portal in basketball and then just never making, that's it, never playing again.
Yeah, it's even worse. It's even worse. It's a huge amount. But at the same time, you got to think about this too. Some kids, because you look at the numbers, right? But even when I was in college before the transfer portal, there were guys on my team that were, they were probably promised a scholarship for 4 years, right? But every scholarship is 1 year renewable. And so some of these kids, they don't have a choice. They're going to the transfer portal because that coach brings those kids in and says, hey, we didn't work out here. We over-recruited you. You're not at the level we thought you were. And we're going to help you any way we can to find another school. But you're going to have to enter the transfer portal. And so it's not always just we look at the numbers. And we're like, oh, these kids are just quitting. Sometimes they don't have a choice. Sometimes it's the coach that's making that choice for them. But you hit the nail on the head, too, in basketball. So many kids, it's about the level, right? I always say, you know, on X, don't be married to the level. Be married to the right fit. Because I would say a huge majority, especially in Northwest Arkansas, they go and they play at a level that is above their level. And they go to D1, and then what happens? They're right back at D2. Or they go to D2, and they're right back at NAI. They go to NAI, and they're right back to somewhere, you know, D3 or Division 2 to NAI. And so, you know, again, I love what you said. It's like I fell in love with basketball when I was in seventh grade, and it's still my job today. I mean, I love basketball. So it doesn't matter what level it is. I'm going to play it for as long as – and I have kids that I know they love the game, but they have a year of eligibility left. And the last few years, it's gotten so much worse. Like, hey, coach, I just want to let you know I'm not playing my last year. And it's just like it baffles me, right? But at the same time, I think about that same kid back when they started, and it was all the things we talk about. It was early specialization. I started playing when I was in the first grade. I played year-round in an AAU team. I did training my whole life with a trainer. I had all these multiple different trainers. And now when it matters, right, this is when it matters. It doesn't matter when you're young. It should be about fun and development. This is when it actually matters. And you got kids that they don't even want to play anymore. And it's like you have a college scholarship to play that they're going to pay for your school, and you only have 1 year left to play, and you don't want to play? No, sir, I'm done, you know. And then you have other kids who are the opposite of that, right? They were multiple sport athletes, all these siblings, and then they're like, coach, I'm trying to play professionally for as long as I'll play till I'm 40. You know, I'll play for as long as I possibly can. And those decisions that parents make for their kids when they're young, they're huge. Because if I wrote a book and I just did all the kids I've trained, I mean, it would be the kids that still have a huge passion are the opposite of what parents would think. You know, they're the kids that were late bloomers. They were the kids that weren't on the gold teams. You know, I've got several kids right now that are playing at a high level. I got, you know, professionals. I've got Division One high major kids. But if you look at some of these kids' paths, you know, it's not the path. It's such a long, crazy path for an athlete, especially a college athlete that ends up becoming a professional athlete. And it's not always what they think. You know, I think parents think if I get them early, it's just going to be this smooth path to a college scholarship and to a degree. And it's never going to be that way. It's such an up and down process. Another story you just made me think of a second ago. I had a parent who every year I've told this parent that none of this stuff matters. You know, he's always about what AAU team she's going to be on and what team, you know, this and what tournament they're going to be playing in. And it's like, none of that stuff matters. Like it doesn't matter. But now she's going to be a senior, right? And the parent says, hey, we're just like, I just told her, you know, we can just play, you know, whatever AAU team you want to play on. If you just want to do it for fun with your friends, go do that. If you want to go to a maybe a mid-level AAU program where you're seen by some local coaches, let's go do that. If you want to go to the most elite team and be with the best players, let's go do that. And I told him, I said, so now this is the last season for her to be seen by college coaches that she wants a scholarship. And now you're just like, now is when it matters, right? This is the time that it does matter to be seen by college coaches if you're trying to be a scholarship player. And he's like, oh, let's go play with our friends. And I'm just like, it's just amazing because like I've told you this every year that it doesn't matter until it matters. Well, now it matters. And your mindset is, well, I just want her to have fun because she doesn't have a scholarship. And, you know, if she doesn't have fun, I just want her to have, you know, be able to have fun. And it's like, that should have been your mindset. It should have been the opposite, right? It should have been, let's just have fun and develop as much as we can. And then now when it matters. And I think if parents would just have that mindset, it's so hard for parents to do. But if they could learn from other parents and learn from coaches and podcasts and research, man, it would be such a better world. And we would have so many better athletes. I mean, how many of the best athletes quit because they're labeled as a bronze member when they're in the age of eight and they go, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm going to end up quitting. And then this kid's strong and big and he's walking the halls. He's a junior. Yet he hadn't played basketball in 3 or 4 years.
You're right.
And it's just, it's like, let's just focus on the fun and development and the big picture and know that the late bloomers are the ones that are going to be the best anyway. And stop labeling and stop, you know, picking out these kids and killing confidence. And let's just have fun. And it's just our youth sports programs, doesn't matter the sport in this country, are just, they're so bad. And it's just, it's killing what could be.
I talk about, like, people helping their kids play sports for exposure. They got to get exposure. Got to get exposure to this. Got to get exposure to that. Got to get exposure for college. Got to get exposure to this level. All the D1 players are playing in this league, right? They're playing in these teams. This is where, you know, and we've got these on X, we've got these youth soccer sites. They're not helping because all they're doing is talking about these are the Power Four schools. This is where they're at in the recruiting process. These are the D1s. This is where they're at in the recruiting process. Only so many spots left. And I could just feel through the phone. I can feel the pressure of these kids starting to panic. It's like, oh my God, all the spots are being taken up. I'm not going to have any spot for me. What about me? I'm not being recruited yet. I want to play at Notre Dame. I want to play at North Carolina. Hey, hon, if you're good enough to play at North Carolina, North Carolina will notice you. They know about you. It's like, you can't hide from North Carolina and Notre Dame, not how it is in basketball, but you can't hide from the Power Four schools. It's really hard to hide from them. And I don't care where you're at. I know it feels like a big country, but I tell you what, in soccer, and I'm sure it's the same in basketball, the word starts to get out in communities and that grows to the next community and the next community. And pretty soon the kid's known regionally. I mean, if you've got a kid in basketball who's you know, got double doubles or triple doubles going every game, like, you can't hide that kid. Even if you wanted to, you can't hide that kid. Somebody's hitting up that kid. And it's the same thing in soccer. A kid's scoring 3 or 4 goals a game. You know, if I've got some young lady who's a 5'11 goalkeeper that's a phenom, it's like, you can't hide. So somebody's going to catch on to you. I really want these kids playing for the love of the game. It's that intrinsic motivation. It's like, oh no, I go out with my friends because I want to. You know, I juggle with the ball because I want to. I go out and just shoot against the wall because I like it. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. My ball comes with me on vacation because it's fun. Because I don't want to be without it. Because I can't see my life being without my sport. I just, this is what I want. This is what I love. And if a kid's doing that and they are talented at the same time, like you said, when the moment comes, right? When the moment comes. And I don't know how it is in basketball, John, but moms and dads, there's a lot of bang on average. I'm glad you like your sport, but you're not very good. Players out there playing in leagues that because they can afford it. And yeah, you know, and I don't know what the roster spot is in basketball, but you know, 12 or 13 on the roster, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a roster spot, but when I see you play, it's like, there's no passion here. There's no drive. There's no special athletic ability. Your technical ability's okay. You can barely cross over dribble, you know? You can't lay up with both hands. You don't even have the basics down, right? And my soccer parents, you know, they can't dribble with both feet. They can't strike the ball with both feet. They duck when it comes time to head the ball. You know, they don't get stuck in hard on a tackle. They just, and they're okay. They're fine. But they're not, there's no phenomenal speed there. There's no phenomenal change of pace. There's no sheer athleticism. There's no nothing. And yet their whole life is about trying to get their kid to a D1 scholarship. And folks, that's never happening. It's just never happening.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
And that's, you know, again, my parents were like the perfect sports parents. I've talked about it on almost every podcast. Like I just never had pressure to perform. They didn't care. It was just kind of what you want to do. They weren't really sports people. You know, even my dad that coached when I was really, really young, like he never coached my own team. You know, I would just go to like his practices. And he was the chief of police in my town. So he was just doing it to volunteer and kind of help out on things. But I never had parental, you know, any kind of pressure whatsoever to play a certain sport. I mean, my parents didn't even, they were just come support, watch. Grandparents were the same way. And I see these parents today and I'm just like, wow. And I was a D1 athlete. And it's just like, I never had any, I didn't play AAU basketball. I wasn't pushed to, you know, do this and do that. I mean, there were a few years that I played some travel basketball, some AAU basketball, but it was never like this big, you know, elite team or, and it's different today. And I know there's sports teams and travel teams everywhere, every corner, trainers and all the different stuff. But my path with my parents, it couldn't have been more just supportive. And there was never any pressure to play anything ever. I think my dad, the only thing I think my dad would say every once in a great while was, I think you could have given a little bit more effort tonight, you know, something like that. But other than that, it was just, it was very, you know, here to love you and let's go eat. So again, you know, that kind of stuff matters. The parents, some of them are crazy, delusional. You know, I talk to high school coaches in this area all the time and they're just like delusional. I mean, kids are, and they have no self-awareness. I mean, kid is, you know, high anxiety and the parent doesn't even know it. It's like it's caused by you, you know, like you don't even know that your daughter has high anxiety reform and you are the root cause of that anxiety. And they just think, oh no, man. And like you said, they got to make excuses. Oh no, you know, this is hard love. And I got to push her because this is what she's going to want later. She's going to thank me later. And it's like, no, she's not. She's not going to thank you later. You know, I know that's the social media soundbite, but that's not reality.
Yeah, no, I really think that kids know where they fall on the spectrum. They know where they fall, man. They know when that's the one kid that owns them. Every time they play them, they own them. And they couldn't beat that kid 99 times out of 100, that kid's going to beat them. They're just a much better athlete. And they know it. They're not stupid. They know that they're the, you know, eighth best player on their team, 12th best player on their team. You know, when they do doggies up and down the court or when they're, you know, doing runs, it's like, oh no, I'm running my hardest and I'm dead last and I'm giving it my all. I just don't have it. Yeah. And kids know, and it's a lot of parents can't see it because of the love for their kids. You know, they just got blinders on and they think it's going to change at some point and it's just never going to change.
Yeah. And it's like you said, the grand scheme of all this is there, you're getting used up by your sport. You know, instead of using the sport to refine yourself and make yourself a better human being of all the different things that sports bring, you know, physical confidence, team, you know, especially in girls. I mean, girls and women, I mean, that's like 80 something percent of high-level CEOs and executives are play the teams for them. It's crazy how much the statistics show on the girls and women's side. But using the sport instead of using it to, I have to get a scholarship, it's like just, you know, you're getting used up by the sport as opposed to you using the sport to refine yourself as a human being, you know, first. If you end up getting a scholarship out of that, great. You know, if you end up going to a level to play in that fits you and you have a great career and you get education out of that free or get to play the sport that you love longer, great. But that shouldn't be the goal, right? That shouldn't be the end game. You know, it's like what you said, by knowing the research, you know, the late bloomers are going to be the ones that are end up, you know, being the best anyway.
No, I absolutely think you're right. Man, so when did you know growing up did you recognize that you were one of the better athletes?
Well, you know, as far as having success, you know, I knew, but I also knew, you know, my mom and dad kept me grounded in the sense of this, you know, this is great, but what's given you success is you've worked hard and you've enjoyed, you know, no one has to tell you to do these things, right? You just go out and you work hard. So, you know, I broke pool records all in my Southeast Missouri area. And I was the national champion at a track. There was a Hershey's, Pennsylvania track. I was the state champion.
Oh, that's a big track meet.
So I did all these different sports and I had success. You know, I was the running back when I was in junior high football and I, you know, scored 4 touchdowns a game. And, you know, I still have Missouri records for 3-point shots in a game. So I knew in that sense that I was being successful. But I also knew, you know, as you get older, you start to realize there's a lot better players out there. You start to travel and know. So, yeah, I mean, I was very competitive. So I tried to win everything. And just, you know, having a military father and, you know, having a chief of police dad in a small town, you know, it was you're going to be held to a standard and you do things the right way. You treat people with respect. And so I was very competitive. And it was just a release for me, you know, really like in the sixth and seventh grade, I was kind of a bad kid. You know, I was ADHD. I was super hyper. So I was always getting in trouble. I was talking in class. I was doing those things. And sports kind of gave me that outlet. But I knew just because of the success I had that I was a pretty good player. But I was just so competitive. I was trying to win everything. Like whatever it was, whatever I played, I was trying to win.
That's one of the keys right there is that competitiveness, man. You can kind of tell where your kid's going to fall on the scale for parents, depending on how competitive your kid is. Because that's a common theme. When you listen, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it was a Tiger Woods caddy. That was his caddy, the Australian guy. I can't remember his name. Yeah. Who was his caddy through his big, big run when he couldn't lose anything. And he's talked about how competitive Tiger was in everything he did. If they were playing chess, he was competitive. He was pissed off if he lost. And, you know, I was kind of that way. You talk about yourself being that way. And that competitiveness, that competitive drive is something that you can recognize in kids pretty early on. And I think it is one of the cornerstones to being successful, especially at the next level.
Yeah, I think so too. And that is something that you can, regardless of like, you know, their skill and their physical maturity at a young age, there are just some kids that you're like, man, this kid is a hustler. He competes, you know, he's very coachable. But again, it's like, well, he's really little, you know, he's not as big as these kids and as strong as these kids. So we're going to put him on the bronze team or we're going to cut him. You know, I get parents all the time that said, hey, I'm just going to let you know, we're devastated, but so-and-so got cut. And I was like, hey, listen, that's unbelievable. I can't even believe that's a true statement. You got tryouts in 10 months, 9 months, stay coming to workouts, stay in it. Like that will change, you know, kids that were cut from teams. I mean, I have a kid right now that just signed a Division II scholarship in New York and he was cut from these local AAU teams in the sixth and seventh grade. I'm just like, I mean, this kid's 6'6". And I can give you so many examples. I can also give you the kid that's a high major D1 that hasn't had great careers. And they're like, I don't even know if I want to play anymore, you know, in the portal. You know, and it's just, but if you go back and look at their youth, it was like, they were McDonald's All Americans and they were the elite of the elite. But again, it doesn't matter until it matters. You know, it's, you want to be the best when it really matters to be the best, right? If you want to play at the highest level and really play, like you said, I'll just take a roster spot, right? Oh, yeah, you know, had a great go. Oh, you never even played your whole career. You know, that's okay. But you could have went D2 and played and been, you know, you've gotten so much better,
right,
developed, and somebody would believe in you more. Coaching staff, you know, a lot of, oh, coaching staff doesn't believe in me. It's like, well, no, you're just not one of the better players. I promise you, if you were one of the best players, like you said earlier, on that team at North Carolina or at wherever, you would be playing. It's not like the coaches are going to be like, well, this girl's really good, but we just don't like her. We're just not going to play her very much, right? It's just not the case. So it's we could go on and on. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just it truly is amazing.
Tell me about your project, johnbethbasketball.com.
My website?
Yeah. What do you have going on?
Yeah, so you can go on there. People can go on there. I try to educate. I have some resources, player resources, and some coaches' resources. I'm going to be adding a lot to those. But it just kind of talks about my training locally, because I do more of a training academies in this area for, you know, junior high to high school kids. And obviously I have a lot of college and pro athletes come back in the summers. But, you know, it's not the typical traditional training that you would think. It's more of like a practice. That's the way I would think of it is I don't have like a set team, but it's kids that are pretty good throughout the area that have a passion. Either they have a passion or their parent have a passion to put them in the training. And it's you know, I use a constraints-led approach, so it's different. It's not the traditional, you know, we do things on air. We do everything with defense. And so, you know, it's more like
– What is that? Explain, for those that don't know, explain to us what you mean by that.
Well, that's a whole other podcast. But the constraints-led approach is basically like – it's a lot of small-sided games where I manipulate constraints. That's the best the task constraints are the easiest thing for a coach to kind of manipulate. And so – you know, again, like if I have a younger kid that's maybe with some older kids, I just say something like, hey, you're allowed. We don't want to, you know, take away the perception action coupling, but we also don't want to just have the kid go in there and get a shot blocked every time, right? So you just say, hey, you guys, this guy's younger. He's 2 years younger than everybody. So we just simplify the task of you're not allowed to block his shot. You know, we don't want you to, like, you're not allowed to steal his ball. You're not allowed to block a shot. So he's still having to see and react and do things, but I can manipulate the constraints individually with kids in a group setting. And I can also give them constraints, you know, as a team. You know, if I got a small sided game going on, it's like, hey, you're not allowed to run, you know, a ball screen, or you're not allowed to run any kind of handoff. You can only catch the ball outside the 3-point line. So I just try to have a lot of small sided games where I manipulate constraints and not. I just try to nudge them towards finding solutions of what I kind of want them to work on. And so it's a different, you know, I had a guy call me today and he's wanting to bring his son, and he's like, well, is it individual or is it group? And I said, well, it's group, but it's not the group that you're thinking of. It's not the kid that kicks the soccer ball to a kid and then goes to the end of the line and waits for five other kids to do it and then goes to the end of the line. It's such a – every single kid is involved in every single rep. You're playing offense and defense, you know, and it's small-sided games. But it's also not just – a lot of coaches, I think, they kind of misconstrue what CLA is. They think, oh, small-sided games, everybody plays 2-on-2 and 2v1 and 3-on-3. But it's so much deeper than that, because – you're trying to nudge them towards, you know, affordances, which is like opportunities for action of what you're wanting them to work on, you know, whether it's handling pressure or finishing around the rim or, you know, being confrontational on drives and whatever it is. But you can kind of, it takes a lot of practice, but you can kind of observe and then say, okay, what's happening or not happening in this small-sided game. And then as a coach, how can I kind of change the game to bring out some different opportunities for these kids to work on skills, if that makes sense.
My soccer coaches that are out there listening to this will recognize that. We do that in small-sided games too. We'll, you know, say it's a one-touch situation, two-touch situation. The ball's got to go out wide and then be crossed in. It can't be shot from this zone. Because you're trying to teach and force within the freedom of the game, also force a repeated action over and over, you know, kind of like surfers in the wave pool, as opposed to being in the ocean. You know, it's tough for the surfers in the ocean to repeat actions, but in a wave pool, they can repeat it over and over and over again. They can get the same wave. It's kind of that same idea with soccer. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about with basketball.
Yeah. And it's like that. It's repeating solving a problem as opposed to repeating a technique over and over again. So it's
technique, right.
They call it repetition without repetition. So we're trying to solve a problem, but it's like, how many different ways can we solve this problem and bring out the, you know, these kids, instead of me telling them, hey, you have to use this technique. Well, we don't know what it feels like to be in their body. We don't, I mean, there's so many different, you know, things that go into that. And so you're just trying to get, you know, kids exploring as many different possibilities, especially in their youth, right? Because we don't know who the next, you know, LeBron James is and the next great soccer player is. We have no idea. So we're trying to let kids just explore their solution spaces and try to solve problems on their own. Now, if it's not functional, right? If that's where we can come in and give some external cues as a coach. It's not like we're just not coaching, but it's also, you know, you go to some of these youth practices around and some of these trainers, and it's like, kids don't learn by listening to you talk and show these techniques. Kids learn by doing, you know, problem solving in their own space. And it doesn't mean you can't coach, but let's coach a lot less and let kids kind of explore.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. I like that approach. So for anybody that's in, it's in the Missouri, it's Arkansas, right?
Yep.
Northwest. Anybody in the Arkansas area into basketball wants some help, this sounds like a great resource. John, people can also find you on Twitter. He's at Coach John Beck. That's J-O-N, no H. At Coach John Beck on Twitter, on X. And he's a great follower. He's got 75,000 followers. He's posting, and coaches out there listening to this, and parents, follow him. Even though he's basketball, I think if somebody didn't look up your profile, John, and just read your tweets every day, they would have no idea what sport you coach.
That is 100% a true statement. The reason I know that is because I literally have thousands of DMs, and it's from every sport. It's like, hey, sir, I would love to come play soccer at your school. I would love to come play baseball. Please look at my profile. I'd love to come play football. And I'm just like, I never even respond. I'm like, there's so many. But it's like, I'm a basketball coach, you know. But I do think what you're saying is true, because I think kids read those things, or they're sent from a coach, and they don't, you know, deep dive into it. They just think, oh, man, he's, you know, he's got to be a tennis coach. I got to text this guy and see if I can get a scholarship.
So, I don't know how long I followed you and shared your stuff before I really looked at your profile and I realized, oh, dude's into basketball. Man, he's sharp. And it is amazing how what we say, how we coach, how we teach, how we approach the game, how we deal with parents, it can apply to virtually every sport.
Oh, 100%. I actually have a basketball athletic director in the school that I'm working at, their school now. And she said, Coach, can you come and do a presentation for all of our coaches? And she's like, do you do stuff just besides basketball? And I said, yeah, I mean, it's all the same, right? It's team sports. And so the constraints led approach, especially, it doesn't matter what the sport is. You know, you can use the constraints led approach. So I always encourage coaches to do it. And the best way to encourage coaches to go down that rabbit hole is, I always, because they'll say, oh man, I'm not smart enough to do that. They're old school coaches. They've been coaching 30 years and they have no idea how to do that. And I say, you already do it. And they say, no, there's no way. I don't even know what you're talking about. And I say, yeah. I said, if you coach a game and your best player picks up two fouls, what do you do? Just keep playing her? And they're like, no. Okay. Well, then you're starting to understand that you're manipulating task constraints. Like you're starting to, if so-and-so's got this many fouls and so-and-so's hitting three-point shot, like you're calling timeout, you're making adjustments, you're changing from what you observe and see. And it's just like, but then you're a prisoner to your practice plan, as opposed to, you can do those same things in practice. Like, we want to work on this, but we also have to observe what's happening or not happening and manipulate and change things to help better serve our kids, you know, in practice. So, you know, it's so unfortunate that coaches won't go down, you know, the rabbit hole, because that's what, I mean, it's the money ball in basketball, baseball. You know, you got four or five NBA teams doing this now at the highest level. You know, it's just a different way, you know, instead of repeating techniques and isolation, it's how can we get kids, you know, to actually be able to have the science of perception, action, coupling, and be able to see and react to things. So that's what it comes down to anyway, right? It's the human body. You know, doesn't care what the coach says, right? It's going to have to see and react in real time. And so it's like, if we can train that way, we're going to become such, you know, we're not going to have robots. We're going to have players that are able to adapt to the ever-changing environment, which is team sports. And so, you know, I encourage any coach, parent, player, you know, anybody to start going down the constraints-led approach rabbit hole, because it's a whole new lens, you know. I think in 2015, 16, I was exposed to it. I started listening to Rob Gray podcast, And I was just like, light bulbs went off. It's like, I've always known this as a player in college. We did so many repetitive drills, right? And it was said that that's the way to get better. And, you know, you have to be fundamental and you have to do these boring repetitive drills over and over again. And in college, I was like, you know, we spend the first hour and a half of our practice doing these things. And I've mastered these things in the eighth grade, ninth grade. And this is not what helps me get better. Like a mic and drill around the rim with nobody on me. Number one, I'm never going to go in and finish because I'm a 6 foot white guy playing Division I basketball.
Right.
Right. And it's like, oh, this helps you with footwork. And it's like, no, it doesn't. We don't even, I mean, even if I were to go in there, I definitely don't want to go off 1 foot, you know, and looking back on all those things, I always knew it. And we would play a lot of 3-on-3 in practice and we would work on certain aspects of the game. Right. And I thought, man, this is where I really feel like we get better. So I always knew it as a player. And I always thought, why am I doing these boring, repetitive, fundamental drills? And then if you really think about it, those things never really happen in games, right? Because why? There's defense there. You have to find different ways. You can't just kick a ball straight. Like you have to be able to see and react. And so any evasion sport, I just think if we can train that way, you know, in an environment that's unstructured, but also we have some teaching going on and letting kids explore, you know, their space, man, we create so much, so many better players. And it's just more fun. It's a more fun way, you know? So if you're really thinking about coaching, it's like the overseas motto is, you know, as many as you can for as long as you can in the best environment as you can. And if we go into that, it's like you get a kid that comes to a constraints-led approach practice and a kid that's used to a traditional practice, it's night and day. I mean, they love it. It's fun because, again, it's games. It's where you compete. It's representative of how they play. Every kid that plays, they want to play. They don't want to do drills. They want to play basketball. If all the adults left, that's what they would do. They just start playing, right? And I always tell, like, adults in basketball, is like if you go play pickup basketball at the park, do you guys do a 2-on-0 passing drill or a 3-man weave up and down before you play? And they're like, heck no. I mean, it's like, but that's what's still going on to this day. You go and these people will do 30 minutes of passing drills, and it's like, we got to be able to play basketball. Like we can, those kids can do that. That's great. But you have to be able to play basketball, right? And it's unpredictable. That's what makes sports so fun and enjoyable and so competitive. It's so unpredictable. And so why don't we train, right, and practice in this unpredictable environment? And so, man, learn about CLA, all the coaches out there.
Yeah, you sound like, do you don't happen to follow Coach Todd Bean, do you, on Twitter? Probably not. You wouldn't. Probably haven't come across this world.
I do follow a lot of constraints-led approach guys, and that name does sound familiar.
He's a soccer guy. He's Johan Cruyff. I don't know if maybe you've heard the name Cruyff. The soccer people will know the name Johan Cruyff, one of the most famous soccer guys, but this is his son-in-law. And he's preaching what you're talking about all the time, that, you know, stop it with the drills and the standing in line drills and the shooting drills and this kind of drill and that kind of drill, the passing drills. Make it game-like. Make it as game-like as possible. And like you said, you set the constraints within the game. That's where the coaching happens. You can draw out the coaching moments. But, man, it's so good to hear basketball the same way. Look, one of my favorite movies is Hoosiers. And, you know, they've got that famous scene where he's teaching them snap, snap, snap that pass, snap that. And they're just doing it, looks like, probably for hours every day, snap passing that ball. And so we see that, you know, the non-basketball guys like me see that and go, that still must be, or the three-man weave. Look, they brought it into soccer. A parent posted the other day, never mind a parent, player I played with in high school, posted the other day about how great the three-man weave is for soccer. And one of my, I didn't speak up because he's an old friend of mine, but one of my friends spoke up and said, please, coach, please don't do that. Please. It's like, yeah. It is something. So it's good to hear that that's the way that basketball is moving. And as you've studied it, I didn't know that baseball was moving that way too, because look, when you watch video of spring training, you know, they're hitting that ball at the shortstop over and over and over, the same ball, you know, Adam, over and over and over, and the repetition of the same play and the same move. And you hear the argument for it, and it's, well, you know, muscle memory, right? We're building muscle memory.
Doesn't
like,
exist.
Yeah, I'm 62 years old. I've still never forgot how to strike a soccer ball. I don't know what muscle memory we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. So, you know, and again, it's you know, if you really study the research, And I know it sounds great, and I even believed it for years, you know, the muscle memory, but it's we're not computers. We don't get to take a technique and put it into our brain, and then the unpredictability, just pull out this technique that we've worked on in isolation and put it into the right time of the game. And so that's what a lot of parents think, though. I get people come to me all the time, and they're like, we really need to be in to do some individual training. And again, I'm not saying there's not a time for some, you know, task decompose.
Of course.
Beginners, of course. Like in the research shows beginners, absolutely, we need to do as much of that as possible. But if you're not a beginner and you've been playing competitive basketball for 3 years, the last thing you need is to practice in isolation. And we want to do as much of that as they want to do on their own, right? Player-led development as opposed to an adult or a coach development, you know, led development. Player-led development, they're going and they're working, like you said earlier, they're working on their shot, they're working on their passes, they're doing all that stuff. They got their headphones on. That's, we want to do as much of that as possible. But when it comes to a training session with the coach, we want to use the best tools, which is the other players, right? We want to have, because in isolation, that's not going to exist in a real game. And so we want to be able to train, you know, we want to be able to use the other players as much as we possibly can, bridge the gap between the individual development and the team development.
Yeah. To quote David Bowie and Queen, under pressure, right?
That's right. That's right. It changes things for sure.
Hey, John, I really appreciate you coming on with me, man. It's so good to get to know you. Has everybody ever told you, now that I see you live, you look a little like Joe McHale. You got a little Joe McHale vibe going on there.
I got to look that up. I've never been told that.
You don't know Joe McHale?
No.
The comedian, Joe McHale? Yeah, look him up. He's he seems like a good dude, but you got a little bit of that Joel McHale vibe going on there. So now everybody's going to rush to the YouTube version of this to check out what I just said and go, I gotta see this for myself. But hey, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I'll look forward to continuing to follow you on Twitter, and we'll have this out. We'll have this released in a week or two.
Awesome. I appreciate the opportunity as always. Thank you so much.